Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. Today, we are going to be talking about travel destinations for wargamers. You might be thinking, why the heck are they talking about travel destinations when there's a pandemic going on? Well, in case you didn't realize, people are getting vaccinated, things are opening up, and there will be a life after a pandemic. And when that happens, people will be flooding to hit all the planes, the trains, and the automobiles to get to wherever they want to go. And of course, I couldn't talk about this by myself. I am joined by the one and only Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you today?
Doing great, John.
Don't lie.
All right, I feel like garbage, but I'm glad to be here anyways.
I am glad you are here too. So before we started to record for this episode, I happened to do something I never do. And that was look at some stats, because I was just kind of curious how things were going with the first episode that we put out. And within like the first, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks of it going out, over 1,100 people listened to it.
Wow. And
I know. I was like, wow. So I know generally we get about 1,200 people per episode on average. But I figured, you know, we waited a while and we had the Kickstarter and all this, that, and the other and everything else. And maybe people just wouldn't want to be diving in to a podcast so soon, or maybe they had gave up on us or whatever, and clearly not. So I really credit you with that, because I think people are just so excited to hear you and have you back in their worlds again.
I imagine that's probably true.
I mean, let's be honest, it's not me.
I don't know about that, but that's good. That's gratifying. Yeah, we were. I would have understood fully if people had started to think, what happened to these guys? I guess they're gone. But yeah.
Yeah, they were all like, those losers, let's get rid of them. Cancel them now. Said they were going to do a thing, and they haven't done it. Forget them. Jerks.
Good Lord.
No, yeah, it's was really exciting to see that. Yeah. And unexpected, honestly, for me. I was like, whoa, that's real.
Behold. It's good to be loved.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. So what are we talking about tonight? I forget.
Well, if you listen to the intro, which I did not mess up for a change,
yeah,
you would know we're talking about travel destinations for gamers.
I guess, and I'm having memory problems because I did sort of listen because I was counting on you messing up, but yeah.
I think maybe it's just because you're getting older and then your memory goes as you age.
Well, there's definitely truth in that, because I am definitely getting older.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So
the pandemic is not over, of course, but things are opening up, people are getting vaccinated, and they will be life after pandemic. It'll happen at some point. And I firmly believe people are gonna be calling their travel agents, they're gonna be hopping online, trying to book flights or cruises or whatever. They're gonna be traveling everywhere.
Yeah.
And gamers are no different. Wargamers are going to want to go places and going to want to do things that are going to spark some joy for them. And let's be honest, conventions are going to be near the top of that list.
Oh, yeah.
But aside of conventions, there's other places to go that can bring you some happiness as a wargamer. And especially if you are going with maybe other gamers and other buddies, or you're bringing your family and you're doing a thing, they might not all want to be going to a convention. But there are places that you can go where everyone can kind of have some fun, and they can kind of check off the boxes.
Yep.
So I think really when it comes to this topic, a lot of it is really going to be grounded in like what you're looking for. What do you game? Where are your interests? What things might be on your bucket list? A lot of that can be very generalized to travel in particular. But like, for example, we know I love the American War of Independence.
Yep.
And so for me, a place that I think gets overlooked a lot, but is really worth going, is Newport, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
a bastion of the British Army. Rhode Island was very loyal for a large portion of the war. And so you really still have some great examples of architecture down there. Of course, you have the whole Amistad situation later on. So a lot of that colonial architecture still exists. Downtown Newport is historic, so you can still walk around, get the feel for everything. They also have the Naval War College down there. Yeah. So you can go on the naval base, and you can go to the Naval War College Museum, which is amazing, yeah, where they talk about all sorts of stuff that happened from like beginning of the U.S. Navy on. You can see some really cool dioramas and model ships. They have inactive torpedoes that you can go and check out. It just like everything. And at one point, which was really weird, but they had a whole exhibit on feudal Japanese armor. And I don't remember how they came about getting it, but I remember being there right after, and we were invited up into like the curator's office, I guess, and they still have the stuff up there. So being able to see the authentic armor from, you know, the 1100s, from the Sengoku period, it was really cool. And they change exhibits all the time, so yeah, it's open to the public, so you can get in, you can see that. And also, from when you're there and when you're looking at that stuff, you can usually see from a distance anyway, you can usually see some of the ships that are there as well. So one of the last times I was there, we were able to see there were two carriers that were being decommissioned, and so they were there. And my dad used to be based down there, so he's retired Navy, as are you. And so when we're with my parents, we actually get to go on the base itself, and which is just really neat. And of course, not everyone gets to do that, but just like Newport in general just has so much history. And I mean, there were no battles fought there of any renown or anything, but like you can just really soak up a lot, I think, if you're into the AWI, and just kind of really get that and give you a lot of ideas, both whether you're going to do cartography, whether you want to make terrain, or ideas for your model making, for your actual gameplay. And it, I think, also brings to life some of this stuff from when you're reading books and reading stories. And a lot of these things, many people just know from school, right?
But
live it.
Maybe not know, but have heard of. And it's nice to be able to go to a place you've heard about in school and probably didn't particularly care about.
It takes on a
you know, it's more interesting and has more meaning if you actually can go to the place and say, oh, okay, I kind of get it now. It's not as dull or whatever as I maybe had thought it was. Yeah. So yeah, now that's kind of nice. It's interesting you mentioned the Naval War College and the museum there. I mean, I was one of the reserve units I was in was in Shore Undersea Warfare Unit. We were based at Newport, so I haven't been down to the War College. I guess since I retired, which has been a while now. But yeah, that is a neat place to go to and walk through. So
I never knew you were based down there at some point.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I was like living down there or anything, because it was reserve, you know, I was down there one weekend a month and then, you know, AT and whatnot. But Newport is a nice place, and Newport is a good destination because it's obviously a big vacation spot anyway. So if you're there to get your historical juices flowing, then there's plenty of stuff for the family to do besides. So that makes that one a particularly nice one.
Yeah.
But yeah, museums in general are good sources of inspiration. Like not necessarily specifically for something you might have in mind you want to do, but sometimes you just get burned out, you know, and it's like you need something to light the fire again. So another good one that's local to, well, it's not local to me anymore, but it was a favorite spot is Battleship Cove in Fall River.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Battleship Massachusetts down there and the destroyer and so on, and just all kinds of stuff. And it's great to get down there and just wander around and see all the stuff they had there. They have the PT boat exhibit. It's a really, really nice museum. And of course, Massachusetts is awesome to get on that and see, because it's, you know, particularly if you're a naval gamer, even if you're not a naval gamer, I mean, you watch movies or whatever and it's, oh, these battleships are so big and everything. The way you're standing on one and see how big it really is, you know, it's really kind of, it's very cool. And there's a lot of museums like that. Well, I shouldn't say a lot. They're getting fewer and fewer, but that have, you know, battleships on display like that. The Texas is on display. I forget exactly where, but there are plenty of, you don't have to travel to Massachusetts to see a battleship, I guess is my point.
No, that's true.
They have the Missouri at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. You can go on. They have the, you know, the surrender table and everything set up there where the Japanese signed the surrender documents at the end of World War II. And it's just, it's all very cool. I love the museum experience, but I'm a bit of a nerd, I guess.
I once took my dad down. It's going to sound like we went really far, but we didn't. We went to Quincy because the Quincy shipyards built so many of the ships for World War II. And right. So they have a vessel on display that you can go and take tours of. And I've been there before, but it was really neat going with my dad because like you being, haven't been in the service, he just knew intimately so much of the stuff, even though he had never served on that type of vessel before. Things just kind of like popped out. And so we're walking around and he's like, oh, this is that, and this is that, or whatever. And, he was talking with one of the volunteers who turned out was retired Navy. And so they invited us back into like the private crew quarters. So we actually got to go see all this stuff, and it's just amazing history, but how much he picked up on and just kind of remembered and brought things back for him. Little things that people wouldn't normally get.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'd forgotten about Four River Shipyard over there. That's a decent place too. Haven't been there in forever. Yeah, museums are great. Even it doesn't even have to necessarily be a specifically military oriented kind of a place either. It's even if you go up to say the MFA, Museum of Fine Arts up in Boston, plenty of stuff up there that should, if you're thinking like an ancients campaign or something like that, and you go through the Egyptian room up there, there's just plenty of stuff to get the juices flowing of stuff that you may want to do or represent in your game or whatever. So there's a lot of stuff not to be overlooked.
No, I think that's a great example because they have, obviously the go-to would be like ancient Egypt, or they have the ancient Roman, ancient Greek stuff, yeah. But also they have some really great Asian art. And there, and I find that's like really helpful for when it comes to things like wanting to get an idea of what sort of color palettes were used and pigments. So if you want to bring some of that to life in what you're working on, and obviously just even soak up the atmosphere. And then they have a whole, I can't remember what they refer to it, but it's basically where they have a lot of African art. And so they have some of these, this is one, I can't remember what specific culture or nation, current nation it is that it's from, but there's this gigantic wooden mask, and I think it was a ceremonial one that was intended to kind of represent some actual warrior masks that were previously used by the specific peoples. And of course it doesn't help that I can't remember who they are, but like just seeing that and being able to kind of translate that into whether it's ancients or whether you want to go into some of the colonial fighting over there, you know, the Bible and the gun and just all that kind of, which is obviously controversial for a lot of individuals for many reasons. But even all the way up to like Wars of the Sudan or things like that, where a lot of that kind of continues, or the Boer Wars and so forth, you can kind of get a feel. So even if it's not specific to the peoples that you're playing as on the table, it helps you to kind of be in a general mindset, I think, and to kind of appreciate that type of art and what maybe the peoples were thinking at the time and what they were experiencing. There's this famous painting of Paul Revere as a silversmith, and he's holding some of his stuff and he's looking, and just it's painted shortly ish after the American Revolution, but just being able to see that, you can kind of see how he chose to be portrayed and like the relationship with the artist. So that kind of gives you an idea of what the people who were around at that time were thinking and experiencing of one another and of these famous situations that existed. And so you can kind of cut through, you know, the fog and all the hearsay, I guess, of would be a polite term for what is passed on to us about what really happened, as opposed to what the realities might be. Yeah. So no matter where you go, you can kind of get that vibe, I guess, just by, I mean, looking at the art, going to any of these museums. The Gardner up here would be another good one for that. But I mean, there's museums like this all over the place.
Yeah, or just walking around town. You can take a walking tour around town and hit all the major historical sites. I mean, that's a long day, but you can do it. But even if you don't do that, if you just take the T up and get off of the Commons and, you know, everything, well, not everything, but a lot of the stuff is right there that is, you know, tied directly to the Revolution. So even that kind of stuff for me has always kind of been, that kind of gets me back in the mood, I guess you would say.
Well, I mean, there's a great monument too for the American Civil War right there on the Common of the Massachusetts. It's so awe-inspiring. And granted, it's a monument, but even so, it has a lot that I think it portrays. And you're right, that's just out public art.
Yeah, just got to walk up there and see it.
Yeah, but it's a good spot there too.
Yeah, it is. Aside from just the historical stuff, again, that it's a good touristy spot. There's no shortage of stuff to do in Boston.
Well, and I mean, down your way, Pennsylvania's, this is going to sound like I'm being impolite, but riddled with all sorts of history and great locations. And I mean, people obviously would think about Philadelphia, for example, Liberty Bell and all that kind of stuff. But there's just tons all over the place.
Yeah, it is. I'm in kind of a good spot down here, actually. Valley Forge is about 15 minutes away. Brandywine Battlefield is also about 15 minutes away. Paoli is right here. Just right in the middle of tons of Revolutionary War stuff. Germantown's not far away, although Germantown was nothing like it was during the Revolutionary War. It's basically in the middle of Philadelphia now, and it's kind of not a great looking spot. But anyway, it's there. Look, I guess location is everything, right? But that's on my to-do list, actually. I have never, when I lived down here as a kid, I never went, and I haven't been since, but Brandywine Battlefield is on my, one of the first things I want to do here when I'm up to doing anything. Cause like I say, it really is literally about 10 or 15 minutes from here. A lot of Brandywine Battlefield now, unfortunately, is private property. But there's still a good portion of it that you can get onto and just walk around and see some stuff. But a lot of the stuff that you would read about, say, example from the Battle of Brandywine when Washington was retreating, all the various fords and everything that they used across the rivers and whatnot, those all still exist as locations. You can go and see those. I've got one just kind of down the street here from me. It was sort of it's a very historical area. It's a lot like Boston, I guess you could say. Philadelphia has a ton of great stuff. Of course, you have Independence Hall down there. You do have the Liberty Bell, which used to be at Independence Hall years and years and years ago. That's where I first saw it, but now it's in its own building. one of the coolest things in Philadelphia, for my money anyway, that you can go and see is it's a street called Elfrith's Alley. It's I'm not going to spell it, Elfrith's Alley. But it's the oldest residential street in America, I think, supposedly.
Oh, wow.
It may very well be the most expensive street to live on in America now, because it's all private residences, but the houses are basically as they were in, 1770, say. People can't, it costs you a lot of money to live there, and you can't do anything with the house really once you're kind of in it. I mean, there's obviously nods to modern conveniences, but you have to, it's like any historical building. If you buy a historical building to live in or whatever, there's severe restrictions on what you can actually do to it. But Elfrith's Alley is worth seeing. The street is still cobblestone. It's very cool. I haven't been down there forever, but as I recall, it's not all that far from Independence Hall. It's probably walking distance. So they've got the Betsy Ross house, of course, which, you know, Betsy Ross's role is pretty much in question, but still a cool thing to see. But yeah, no, I've got a lot of stuff that I want to do as soon as I feel up to doing it. Valley Forge is right here. No big battles, of course, but very beautiful park to walk around in. A lot of cool stuff to see there. The visitor center has a lot of interesting displays and everything. Paoli Battlefield, which was more of the Paoli Massacre, I guess you would say, is also not far from here. But anyway, as long as we're battling on about battlefields, or I guess I am, I would say my number one spot to go for inspiration is a battlefield or an actual spot where, you know, something historic happened. And so I've said before many times, I'll say it again, my favorite place, at least of the places that I've been to in the world, my favorite place in the world is Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Because I think everybody knows the significance of that particular battlefield. The beginning of the end sort of thing for the Confederacy, even though the war dragged on for two more years after that. But the just walking around on that field, if you don't feel some kind of emotion, you might want to get yourself checked out. There's probably something wrong with you. But just if you've done any reading, though, or anything, even if it was only reading that you had to do for school about the Battle of Gettysburg, to then be able to go there and, you know, stand on Cemetery Hill, or, you know, stand at the angle where the, you know, Pickett's charge was converging on. Very cool, very awesome to go feel that stuff. Barlow's Knoll, all the great places. I'm going to walk through downtown Gettysburg, where they drove the Union soldiers back through there onto Cemetery Ridge on the first day. It's just, it's really, really cool. And I don't mind saying it's a little bit emotional for me. I love that place. But if you're planning on, you know, say doing a Battle of Gettysburg game or scenario or something, and you have that resource available to you, I mean, geez, why wouldn't you go look at it, you know?
No, you're right. I know before he did the Kickstarter for the buildings, Jörg Bender from Things from the Basement, him and his wife were down there. And they spent so much time just walking around and getting the feel for the place and observing the buildings, just really, like, I don't know if they took sketches. They must have, because his stuff is spot on. But yeah. I think he's just a great example of how he immersed himself in this location, right? And exactly. Like, you can tell he felt something, that he was moved by it because of what he created from that experience, and just how incredible that is and what one's able to do with it. And of course, anyone who watches any sort of tabletop gaming stuff has probably seen Little Wars, and their whole Battle Gettysburg game at Gettysburg was just so cool.
Very cool. They did that in Lee's headquarters. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. That was something else.
But yeah, no, that's a great place. And again, that's another one. Now, a lot of people would say one of the bad things about Gettysburg being as popular as it is, it is a bit touristy. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of true, but they really, really were. It's not kitschy touristy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
There's plenty of stuff there for everybody to do, but they kind of regulate the kind of stuff that they do and don't allow, like even in the town. So it's, there's a lot there for the entire family to do, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. A lot of times when I go up there, most people probably don't want to go to Gettysburg with me because I tend to want to spend most of my time on the battlefield, whereas other people want to go to the restaurants and eat and do some shopping and all that kind of stuff. So, but there's a lot of that right in the center of town. And it's just a lot of fun just walking around the town. And the other thing about Gettysburg that I find pretty cool is it doesn't matter when you're there, there's always reenactors there, Civil War reenactors.
Wow.
So it kind of just adds to the whole atmosphere. And one thing that they do now that they used to not do so much is that a lot of times they'll allow reenactor groups to set up actually on the battlefield.
Oh.
Not really in the spots where the battle was fought, but still on battlefield road and stuff as you're driving around. And they'll have a little reenactor camp set up there, which is pretty cool. It just adds to the atmosphere, makes it a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
It is. And they're pretty particular about which reenactor groups they'll allow to actually set up on the battlefield, because some are better than others at giving the Civil War impression, let's say. So you're not going to see any. You shouldn't walk into any of those camps on the battlefield and see a Coleman cooler laying around, that kind of thing. Let me say that. They're fairly authentic, the guys that they allow out there. So it really adds the atmosphere. It's a lot of fun. They do some stuff that I would actually like to do, even though it's kind of goofy. They do ghost tours of the battlefield at night, things like that. But it just, it all adds to it for me. If I'm looking for inspiration, or if I just want to, that's like, I guess I would call Gettysburg my happy place when I'm like really at the end of my rope and I need to like, life isn't all that bad, is it? I go to Gettysburg. So, and if you're looking for some specifically hobby related reason to go to Gettysburg, I would recommend the Gettysburg Miniature Soldiers Toy Soldier Shop, which is, it's not really gaming. It's not a game store. But it is exactly what it says it is, a toy soldier shop. It's right in the middle of town, not too far from actually the cemetery. And just an awesome freaking collection of toy soldiers. They do actually have miniatures, like the Perry miniature sets and stuff like that. But a lot of other stuff too, like the large 54 millimeter and larger scale figures for actual people who actually know how to paint and they look realistic. And yes, that's a great place to go. If you want to check them out, they're GettysburgMiniatureSoldiers.com. But if you actually need something that you can put your hands on to go to one of these places, then that's the place to go.
Going to Gettysburg with you is on my list of things that I want to do. I think it would just be so much fun.
Well, if we can hook that up, we'll do it. Definitely. Obviously the problem is you got to get down here, but,
well, it's doable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we're talking about the pandemic stuff. I mean, a lot of the stuff is kind of open now. Like some of the, I don't know what state they're in right now, if their visitor center and everything is open or what. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. It depends on which way the freaking breeze is blowing, but you can certainly go out and tour the battlefield. I mean, they don't close that. So, but yeah, we can, if you can get down there, we should be able to hook that up.
I remember when I was younger, we went to Yorktown and just how much I enjoyed that. My family likes, it's all in good fun, but they like to kind of poke fun at me that I spent like 3 hours with my dad's video camera going around and narrating the battle for them.
Oh.
And it, I mean, I don't remember tons of it, but apparently I did this and it was like 104 or something that day. And so one by one, like members of my family were slowly dropping off and to go back in the car to have the AC until finally it was just like my dad and me. And he says, well, we've been out here for X amount of time. We should probably head back. And I'm like, but there's more. We didn't get it all. And look, and here's a readout and we got to do this and that.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, that was great.
I can totally see you doing that. It's too bad you don't still have that footage.
Yeah, Lord knows where that is or what happened to it a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
It's just so many moons. But yeah, Yorktown was a lot of fun, and going to Colonial Williamsburg. Obviously, I mean, it's set up to be a thing. It's, as original as the USS Constitution is.
Yeah.
Still, it gives you that feel. It's really neat. For how they do things and everything. So I can imagine Gettysburg being like that, but bigger.
Yeah. Williamsburg. Would you believe I've never been to Williamsburg? I want to go so bad.
Williamsburg is amazing.
Yeah.
It's so good. There's this, I think he's still on there. There's this individual on PBS called, he does a show called The Woodwright Shop, where he makes things, wood, of course, and there was no such thing as a wood right, but he makes things out of wood, but he uses tools that you would have used at the turn of the, I can't say turn of the century anymore, can I? But back in like the 1700s, the 1800s, that sort of thing. And so He did a whole series where he was at Colonial Williamsburg, because at one point he was their woodwright, for lack of a better term. And so, like, you got to get introduced to the person who does all the wheels and the blacksmith and like all these different things, and just see how they do everything and how they're trying to be true to how it was done then. So although they're, you know, acting in a way, it's very much historically driven and grounded in fact for what would have taken place back then. And just, it's, I mean, I was so much younger then, and knowing how much fun I had then, but comparing it to now, it just, it would be so freaking amazing to go do. But again, talk about a place that you could go and fun for like everyone, really.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
No, it's a good thing. I think this would surprise people who know me, because I'm not one who loves to travel, but a place that I would love to go that I think is also really helpful for gamers would be the Vatican.
Really?
Yeah. So they have all the art, right, that you could ever imagine. And it goes through so many periods of time. So whether you want to do pike and shot, whether you like Napoleonics, whether you want to go through the Risorgimento, World War One, World War Two, there's all this sort of stuff that happened there that you can just kind of soak up. And of course, all the architecture is ancients. So you can get all this stuff. It's right in Rome. So if you wanted to go and do like the whole Roman thing, you could do that as well. Keep your hand on your wallet, because Rome has been known to have a problem with that sort of stuff. But the Vatican itself just has so much history, and you could dive into the secret archives, which doesn't mean what people think it means. But like all the museums, a lot of stuff's open air. So you can just kind of go and see that. The borders between the country of the Holy See and the rest of Italy are very fluid-ish. Yeah. So you can get access to so much stuff, and you're right there in everything. So not only do you have all that history, do you have all the art, do you have things like just looking at the Papal Guard, you're looking at the Swiss Guard. That uniform hasn't changed since Michelangelo created it. Yeah. And it was used, how many of them had perished in throughout history trying to protect the Pope as he would escape to Castel Gandolfo, or just in the battles of when there were papal states, when it was an actual country that took up a half of Italy. So you get all this kind of stuff, and it plays a lot with like what I like to call the fancy wars, you know, the wars of the whatever succession. You just pick your choice from that. So you can kind of get all that there. So much kind of plays into it. And then you go even further back, you get like the Holy Roman Empire stuff going on. You get the invasion of what was called the barbarians, which I think that would be renamed nowadays. So the Vandals, the Goths, you name it, the Visigoths, everyone going in, the Huns. So you have like this wider world, and it converges there. And then of course you go back and you have the Romans. So, I mean, talk about empire building, and just right there, and all roads lead to Rome, and you get everything from aqueducts on down. So I think not only does it have all this history, all this amazing food, you're out in a great environment that is just beautiful, and you're the Mediterranean, and you have all this other stuff going on. So it gives you a nice endorphin boost, but also there's all this history that can kind of help inspire you to maybe try out a new time period, or to look at things in a way differently than we would, and to talk to people there who will have this whole different point of view for how we view the history that happened there, and maybe open up one's eyes a little bit so you can see things in a different way. And maybe instead of viewing a certain faction as quote unquote the bad guys, maybe they're not anymore. And maybe you're able to come up with a different scenario idea or whatever. I just think it would be a really neat way to go about it.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Yeah. And I actually got to go to Rome. It's been a long time ago now, but Rome was awesome. Oddly enough, I did not go to the Vatican. I can't remember why. We didn't have a lot of time. And tonight, my wife and I, we were actually more interested in the ancient Roman stuff. So we did go and, you know, check out the forum and everything, of course, which that right there is all the inspiration you need for your Gangs of Rome game.
True.
And the Colosseum, of course, was awesome. So, you know, if you're into the gladiator games like Sons of Mars or something like that. But, yeah, no, those are really good points, John. That is a good place and a good way to look at it. I would not have thought of the Vatican as necessarily inspiration for gaming, but yeah. But I guess we're talking about bucket list destinations. I'm not sure what mine would be. Well, actually, I guess I am. I would love to go and see Waterloo.
Oh, yeah.
I had sort of a chance to do that about 10 years ago, and I blew it off. I didn't go. And I really regret missing out on that opportunity, because now I'm not so sure it'll happen. But, yeah, I would like to see that. Because that's obviously, you know, the culmination of the Napoleonic Wars and everything. I would like to, I wouldn't mind being there where it all happened. But so that would be my bucket list destination, I guess.
Yeah, that's the place for Napoleonics.
Yeah. But so I don't know. What else have we got for travel destinations for gamers? I guess we're talking about historical gamers here, right? Because what if historical gaming is not your thing? What if you're a fantasy gamer? What if you're a sci-fi gamer?
Well, let's say you're into pulp gaming. I think you have to go to the Far East. I think you have to go to a place like Hong Kong. And actually, Hong Kong would be great for sci-fi, for if you're into role-playing games, for cyberpunk or anything like that. Yeah. Just the vibe of Hong Kong, where you have this melding of different societies and different points of view, but also different economic structures and designs for our architecture and everything. It's melded together in a way that I think doesn't get replicated anywhere else on the planet. And it inspires a lot of people for, you're looking at things with, like I said, like pulp gaming, historicals, of course, sci-fi, a lot comes from there, just from the vibe of it all. And you can also use it, I would say, in fantasy too, because not the greatest for fantasy. I mean, people would probably say, like, go to New Zealand because Lord of the Rings, and you get this whole fantasy vibe there, which obviously is fair, right? But there's a lot of, like, fantasy that kind of, I don't think it gets a lot of play here, but a lot of fantasy gaming has this whole vibe for either Japanese or Chinese legends that inspire the fantasy. So you can kind of get all that. It's just a short trip from Hong Kong to mainland China, and then you can just kind of wend your way around it. Each region has its own little sphere of stuff, so everything just is slightly different and give you a different point of view of stuff, and you get a different legend or a different local kami, I think is the Japanese word for it, but like local specter that is inhabiting a rock or a stream or you know, whatever. So you can kind of have all that and all those stories. And that would actually play into horror. There's a lot of really amazing Japanese horror stories that come about. So you can have all that going on no matter what your inspiration is. And I mean, some of that even comes into things like D&D and role-playing games. And so I think once you hit up the Far East, you get a lot of that going on.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, role-playing games is something we've sort of left out too, I guess. But you talked about horror, which is what made me think of it, is Call of Cthulhu, right?
Yeah.
Which is probably the premier horror RPG, at least as long as you're into H.P. Lovecraft. But yeah, plenty of tourist destinations for that kind of stuff. Any so-called haunted house, right, would be potentially a source of inspiration for something like that. That's a good point. Yeah, there is a lot of the, what would you say, like mystery type stuff in Asia, in the Far East, that they, how do I want to say it, probably take it more seriously than we in the Western world tend to do our myths and legends. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. I'm honestly not sure how much of it comes from a lack of understanding here. Like, I, as interested as I am in a variety of aspects of Asian cultures and histories, I realize there's so much I don't know. And I think I probably know more than the average individual here in the West or average American. So I don't know how much of it is, you know, that fog of war, so to speak, for individuals, and or how much is actual authenticity of it. But I think it's probably a blending of the two that kind of exists over there.
So, but yeah, because I know, like, I don't know. I don't even know how I want to express it, but it's like they're, I don't want to say they're more into it over there, which sounds really cheap, and it's not what I mean.
More accepting.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it seems like a lot of the time, certainly here in the States, and I think probably mostly in the West and in Europe, it's like cynicism is our kind of a thing. So when you talk about a spirit inhabiting a stream or something like that, you're going to get laughed at here in the States by most people. Whereas I get the feeling that wouldn't happen in Asia. And so, yeah, it lends itself to more believability, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's grounded more in tradition for them and their various cultures, that even if, you know, younger people or more modern individuals might be like, well, we don't really believe, but maybe, because, you know, there's this tradition of it.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, maybe you don't really believe it, you know, but it's like you just said, it's part of your tradition or your heritage or whatever, and therefore it's important to you. And over here, it's not. Doesn't seem to be, anyway.
Well, I mean, you look back at, say, Conan Doyle, for example, and he was a really big spiritualist and believed that fairies were real and all this sort of stuff. And he got laughed at a lot for obvious reasons. But if you have a Chinese or a Vietnamese or a Japanese or any particular Asian culture, I would say, version of him at that time, I think I don't think they'd be completely in agreement, but I think they'd be more open to the possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. I really do. And I mean, Asia's huge, right? And we're obviously talking about coastal places and ones that are more accessible. But you go like Mongolia, they have, is it in the capital? Is it Ulaanbaatar? That they have these amazing mummies that have been perfectly preserved out in the sands for a gazillion years, right? And so they're...
Original. Is it really a gazillion? Did they age those, like, scientifically?
They did.
They came up with a gazillion?
So they talked to Dr. Strange, and he said a gazillion. And they said, okay.
That's good enough for me.
I thought so. And I think they're, like, Mongol mummies, or one of the tribes that we refer to as, like, you know, the Golden Horde or something. But individuals, and it's so well preserved. The hair is still preserved. The textiles are still there. You can still see some of the colors, the pigmentation and stuff. And things like, you don't get that anywhere else. I mean, you look at an Egyptian mummy, right? And it's so different. Or you go down to Peru, you can get some of that kind of stuff, right? We can, some of them still have hair preserved. Or if you get some of like the bog mummies or the ice mummies from Europe, you can see some kind of remains, but because it's a different type of preservation, you don't actually get as much of, it's not the same, my point. So being able to kind of go there, you can actually see what the actual textiles were from the time period that you're interested in. Tibet. I mean, geez, Tibet. Amazing for many reasons, but Batman, right? So much of Batman's kind of martial arts history comes from this whole mysticism with Tibet. And that plays in, I think, just perfectly with stuff like pulp gaming. And again, you can do sci-fi sort of stuff just with that. And just take off and run. And just so much inspiration and just being able to kind of get this otherworldly sense. And I mean, you're the roof of the planet. So you just get so much there. It's just absolutely amazing.
Right. I've noticed one thing about a lot of our sites of inspiration that we've been talking about is they're practically kind of out of reach. You can't just it depends where you're at, but you can't just you can't just take a boat and hop across the bay to Hong Kong if you live in Nebraska. So
no, that's true.
That is a downside. But
that's fair. But also, I mean, I don't know how many listeners live in Asia. There are some. I know at one point we had more than I would have expected down in Thailand, which shocked me. In Singapore, I think was pretty big at one point. But definitely it's more Eurocentric and Western. And I mean, like, we're leaving out all those castles in Wales, which would huge, right? Carnarvon and so forth. London, for many, many reasons. But whether you want castles, you want to look at architecture, you want everything, right? Obviously great hotspots.
I tell you, my wife and I have been watching. There was a show on. It's run its course now. It was on Stars, called Men in Kilts.
Oh yes.
And she wanted to watch this show. Wanted to watch this show because she's really into Outlander.
Good show.
And I was like, oh my god. It's like, you know what? We need something to do at night. I was feeling crummy, and I was like, you know what? We'll sit down and we'll watch a show. And the two guys, Sam Heughan and Grant McTavish, who are were in the show Outlander, and it's just basically it's a buddy trip of them driving around Scotland in a caravan, and showing you just brief snippets of different areas of Scottish history and culture and all this kind of stuff. And all I want to do now is go to Scotland and do this tour. So yeah, she got me hooked on this. Stupid Men in Kilts show, which wasn't a stupid show, actually. It was a great show. It was only 6 episodes, I think. But yeah, they basically did what we're talking about. They just drove around Scotland and hit all these kind of, and they're both Scottish, obviously. Mm-hmm. All these inspirational sites and the historical things that happened here and the people. And it's like, yeah, I want to go to Scotland right now. Obviously, I can't, but that's what I want to do. It's all I want to do now is go to Scotland and see some of these same things. So,
I think the neat thing about when you get, whether it's Scotland or you get into countryside of the United Kingdom and the British Isles, is that there's a lot of, for lack of a better word, stately homes that, some duke or whoever is living in. And because people think they have all this money, but in order to stay afloat, they open them up to the public. And the Duke or the Count or whoever is doing, the Laird is doing the tours. So you get to go and see all the stuff and ask questions and learn about the clans or whatever. And just being able to do that, I think, adds this whole other dimension to stuff. It's just, fantastic.
Yeah, I would love to be able to do that. So we'll have to see. But anyway, the point is there's tons of inspiration out there. You don't necessarily have to travel to Scotland or Mongolia to get it.
No.
But, like we were talking about earlier on, even just, local museums and stuff are going to have stuff that should get the creative juices flowing for whatever it is you happen to be looking at.
Scotland's not a bad place to go, though.
I don't know. I've never been.
I mean, I've heard wonderful things about it, and I've learned that it appears I might be partially descended from a Scottish laird of some type from the Highlands somewhere. So I don't know how valid that is. I have to do more research.
Here we go with this again.
Oh, geez. Enough out of you.
You're also not Scottish.
Well done. I don't know how much I believe that about being Scottish, but it's worth looking into. And even if it's just an excuse for me to maybe someday end up on a plane and go there. Just beautiful place, if nothing else. If you're into that kind of vibe just for nature, there's so much of it here in North America that you can get. Whether it's just going out in the woods in Maine or hitting, the mountains as you head west. It's just so much you can see. And it'll just, nature's really great inspiration. for all types of nature to just see what it is and just kind of, I don't know, relax. And I find sometimes just being relaxed and just kind of letting some of the stress go away opens up inspiration that I may not have realized was there, even if it's not connected or whatever, but there might be something for a project that I didn't even realize I had inside me, like an idea or whatever. And once all like the just anxiety goes away from other stuff, then that can kind of bubble to the surface. It can be like, oh, why, yes, this is what I should do. And it'll be perfect. And it just, it's been hidden behind stuff.
Yeah.
So no, even if it doesn't, you know, even if it doesn't seem related, maybe it is.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's an excellent point. Cause that kind of anxiety, stress, whatever, that there's probably nothing that crushes creativity more than that, I would guess. And I say that as basically a non-creative person, but it's anything you can do to relieve that. And if that's just going to the local park and taking a walk, then there's your travel destination to help improve your gaming, to say nothing of just your life in general.
No, that's true. And I was actually, this wasn't going to be a touchy-feely, let's deal with mental health episode, but I was talking with my therapist recently about how I find nature to be healing. And also that for me in particular, I seem to get a lot of positive vibes or whatever you want to call them from being around water. And he was remarking that there's been studies done that show a really strong cause in result from water and how it actually boosts your mood and helps you be more creative and get in touch with ideas and stuff and brainstorm and all, just all these sort of things. So you can turn it into, you know, business speak if you want to or whatever, but it relates. So if you're going to go find a stream or a waterfall or a lake or go to the ocean, I mean, you and I are lucky where, I mean, you're inland, but you're still coastal enough. That you can get to that, and all this kind of water and stuff just makes a difference. So if you can tie that into any of your spots, it's really helpful. And even if you can't, this is me speaking and not, you know, a mental health person speaking with any sort of knowledge or experience. But I'm going to go out on a limb that say, even if you're going to get some benefit, probably nowhere near as much, but even if you're doing something like adjacent to it. So, for example, I've been really in tune with watching a lot of YouTube videos. This is one channel I love where this Australian guy makes these dioramas for his railroad. He does model railroading, everything in HO scale. And he makes rivers and you name it, everything. And he was doing an Alaskan stream the other day. And it made fish to put in the stream and a bear and was showing how to do like white water and stuff. And just seeing... It was interesting to watch, but there was a change from the moment he started pouring the resin and, you know, it was colored and everything. So you could see the water. So it's not real water, of course, but it was like water adjacent. And it for me, it did a little something. Maybe will for others, maybe not. I don't know. But so if you can't get to the museum, you can't get to the Vatican or wherever, watch a travel show about it, right? Or read a travel book about it or read an actual novel set in the location that can kind of, I mean, you got to get inventive, don't you?
You do. And I actually, it's funny you talk about reading like novels set in a particular location. I'll tend to do that a lot. And, you know, obviously some are better than others depending on the writer, but if they're good, that's not a bad way to, you know, quote unquote, experience a location. So, and we do live in the age of the internet, of course, so there's no shortage of photography and, like you say, videos and whatnot. It's really easily and readily available. So it's maybe a, I don't want to say a poor substitute, but it's certainly not the same thing as being there, but it's a good resource.
Yeah. I don't think you'd get the full effect.
No, you can't, but
it's something. I mean, like for you, let's say, I have faith you will get to Waterloo someday, but let's say that isn't going to happen. You could read, I don't know, Sharp's Waterloo, and that would immerse you in the battle. I think Cornwall is a great writer for what he does. And so like that could get you there. Or as someone who's really into, I don't know, the War of the Roses, read Game of Thrones. It's the same thing, minus the dragons and so forth. But it'll set you in the same kind of thing. So you can get all this to kind of help you get the atmosphere of it. And then if you want more specifics, whether it's see actual imagery of what the place looks like or whatever, you pick up a travel book, grab your folders, grab your Rick Steves, your whatever. That'll give you some, you know, nonfiction-y kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's a good way to go about it.
But I guess now we're talking about inspiration of the mind because we're talking about reading and not traveling, but that's okay. That's okay.
So when you travel, and while you wait to get to the place you're going, you can spend the time reading, and that's a long shot. But it's true. I mean, people read when they're on a plane or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what I have. I mean, we could probably go on for 5 more hours, but we could also save it up and make another episode in another season about the same topic.
Yeah, we probably maybe better do that.
Yeah. So that's what I have for our topic of travel destinations or vacation spots for gamers. And I really like the ones that you came up with and that you shared. They get me excited about some new places.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, we definitely should try to hook up the trip to Gettysburg. That actually would be fun.
That would be amazing.
We will see how it goes.
Yeah, we can add that to the list.
It's a long list. But yes, yeah. You're right.
So, but doable.
It should be doable.
I think doable. Yeah.
All right.
Well, how can people stay up to date with what you're doing?
Again, I'm the Facebook groups, either just for the podcast or also the fan club. That's the easiest way to do it. I haven't posted a lot in there because I haven't been doing a ton of stuff that's interesting gaming related. I've been now that I've got some time on my hands, I've been reading a bunch of the rules that I bought and haven't had time to read before. So that's been fun, but nobody wants to really hear about that. Yeah, it's kind of all I've been doing. I've actually been doing a lot of, not a lot, but a fair amount of, family gaming.
Oh, so, that's nice.
Yeah. So that's fun. Maybe we can talk about that later, but, we've got the, Cthulhu board game, which is made by the same people that did Pandemic. It's the same kind of a theme.
Oh, right. I remember playing that.
Yeah. So I've been playing that with my wife and daughter, which, to my surprise, neither one of them is particularly a Lovecraft fan, but they've been having a good time with the game, so that's been fun. I just ordered let me pull up my Amazon account, because naturally I just ordered it and can't remember the name of it.
Well, I think you should try the New Bedford game with them about whaling, and I mean, I think it would appeal to your daughter because it has a good message about overfishing and the dangers of whaling. But it's also like a fun and quickish game. So I think that would appeal to your wife because she's not really a gamer per se. But it's like a quick and easy game to kind of do.
It is. And we'll see how the weekend goes. That was actually on my list to see if they wanted to give that a try this weekend because my daughter's going to be coming over. So
nice.
No, I just ordered the game called The Bloody Inn. And it's a card game basically, but the theme of the game is that you own this inn, and you murder your guests and steal their stuff. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. And then you hire your various henchmen amongst the townspeople to help carry this stuff out, and you have to kill these people and steal their stuff and get rid of the bodies and hope that the local constabulary doesn't catch up with you. But if they do, fortunately, it sounds like they're highly susceptible to bribery, so it's not that big of a deal. But anyway, that's supposed to show up on Sunday, so I'm looking forward to giving that a shot. Maybe I'll talk about that a bit on the next podcast if it actually gets in and I get them to play it with me.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I'm nowhere near as exciting as you of late. We are on all the things as Wargaming Recon. I could be funny and make up stuff, but that's where we are. Anywhere and everywhere, you can imagine it. But the reason why I'm not going to be funny, one, because I'm not, but two, also, because I've been working on, and it's all the way over there, otherwise I pull it, but I got my starter box for the Epic Battles.
Oh, yeah.
And it is so wonderful. As my voice cracks like a 12-year-old boy. So I've been building all the Confederates first, and I only have six more sprues of Confederates to do. I've learned that I can't do too many at once because it seems I no longer find the odor of superglue to be something that's appealing. And so after I find like after I do three or four sprues, the fumes are enough that like I have to walk away. I have to go. So no matter how much ventilation I have, that's that. But once that's done, I'll then switch to the Union. And then I have two or three of York Bender's Gettysburg buildings in 15 mil scale that are off at our mutual friend John Caputo's place. He does commissions painting and stuff like that. So he's building and painting them for me. And then I'll be getting those from him. And for part of this project, I want to build more woods because I realize I have a lot of terrain. I have, you know, the gaming mats from Cigar Box Battle. I have hills that Mike Payne made for me that go underneath to add elevation. I also have hills on top and other stuff, rivers and so forth from Wargamers Terrain that I can use. It's funny how all this stuff comes in handy, just kind of going down. It's like how many years ago some of this stuff has come. But then I've made woods using a regular basis that things from the basement created for me with knock trees that I've obtained from the Wargaming Company. And I have more that I can make. And so a thing that I was thinking of was to mix up how I do some of the basing on them. What I've done in the past is I've used the Elmer's wood putty, I believe it's called. It's like a chestnut color that I have to build up around where the trees are so that it kind of gives like a muddy dirt kind of earthen look. And then I will apply some Citadel Sterling mud and Citadel Sterling battle mire to the base. So if it peeks through what I'm going to put up above, you can kind of get this muddy look and so forth and blend it in with the wood putty. And then I've applied just, I have this mixture that I made of Woodland Scenics. It's black and light green. I can't remember the name of it, but black and light green, fine something. But it's like flock almost. It's like, but kind of like a dust sort of thing. So I do that and then it adheres to the paint, the Citadel paint, and then I'll add in like wooden scenics like twigs or whatever. But I wondered about and then if I want, I'll add in like little why can't I think of the name, tufts here and there that I've gotten either from Gamer's Grass by way of Things in the Basement or from Leadbear's Tufts. But I, because of the YouTube channel I've been watching, Luke Towen, I think it is, I'm tempted to get my own static grass thing. Woodland Scenics has one. It's like $100. So put the stuff in. I can't remember what it's called. And then that way, I mean, it's not the same as Tufts, obviously. I'd want to use them too. But that way I can add like, I could define what shape I want, right? So I could put my PVA glue down on these wooded areas and do that. So what I'm trying to do is have one base that actually has the trees on it, and then another one that is identical but has them removed so I can replace it and when units move into it. And so then I thought, well, maybe I could use like the static grass applicator and so forth. But I'm trying to decide how much use I would really get out of it. If it's worth the $100 or how much is just me thinking that's really cool, I should get it. So I don't know, honestly. Right now I'm leaning towards I'm going to get it, but I want to make sure like that I actually go ahead and that I'd want to make more woods too. I don't know that I would have need for more, but I would want to make more. Because I do have tons of knock trees that I haven't used yet. And stuff that I could use. I mean, you know, I'm really into, not that I make much of it, but I'm into making terrain and that kind of stuff and basing. But then I've also, I can't remember if I shared this before, I may have, I painted from Leadbear's Tufts. They sent me Leadbear and You're not going to see. And a little lead beer. Let's fix this. There we go. Lead beer and little lead beer.
Yes, so, I saw those. You sent me the picture of them.
These are just so much fun to do. This nice texture, they've custom made. Yeah. And like I haven't painted anything like this in a long time. And the first time I painted eyes in, I think, ever. So like the eyes aren't great, but like they're cartoony. So I mean, that's probably the extent of my modeling sort of stuff. And I can't remember what I, oh, do you know what I've been doing for gaming? I've been playing on my iPad that I got. I've been playing, what is it called? There's a, we did a whole episode a while ago on it, on political games. So I'm playing something called, is it, no, it's not that one. As I pull it up, I believe it is this one called 270, where you're for an American presidential election and you're trying to win over the electoral college or the primaries. Right. So I've been doing stuff like that on my iPad and getting board games and playing stuff like Life or Battleship or Clue. I mean, Monopoly, all the classics. But I'm looking for, and if anyone has recommendations, I would love to hear them, but I'm looking for like really good like strategy or board game that have good iOS apps out there to give a try and play. I think there's some GMT ones, but I haven't been able to find them yet.
Yeah, GMT definitely has a number of their games that are available that way. So,
but those are on my list, and I'm also about to start reading, and I believe he's going to be coming on at some point. But The Return of Mankind. So he was on the Mythwits. This is published, and this is actually written by John F. Mack, but it is published by Elder Gods Publishing. And I'm Doug Poirier. So I'm looking forward to reading this. This just sounds like a really cool fantasy sort of thing. There's orcs, but there's like low magic, but there's some magic. So, but you know, it's not like Lord of the Rings sort of stuff or whatever. So just kind of interesting to see how that goes, but I'm going to be starting reading that soon. Cool. But I've been limited because I'm basically working three jobs right now at work because of reasons. So anyway, that's been life in a nutshell for me here. And like I said, you can find us on all the things as Wigan Recon. Can find you, right, Adrian, on the stuff. Yeah. And I disagree with you. I think people would be interested in your thoughts about what rules you're reading and why you're reading them.
All right. Well, maybe we can talk about that next time. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them that is just, I mean, you know how I am with rules. Some catches my eye, I'll buy it.
I know.
But, yeah, a lot of, I don't have any intention of playing some of these, but I want to see what they're all about anyway.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's something wrong with me.
I don't think there's anything wrong with you. I do want to let people know that our next episode, and I'm not sure if you'll be able to make it because of things going on in your world, but our next episode is going to have Alyssa Faden on. She's a renowned cartographer, a war gamer, was a convention organizer for Enfilade, and she just does all sorts of cool stuff, whether it's historical gaming, pulp gaming, role-playing games, you name it. She just does all sorts of stuff. So she's going to be coming on and talking about all the things she's doing. She live streams like 3 or 4 days a week and all this kind of stuff. So she'll be on talking about all that kind of thing, which will be really cool. And then also, because believe it or not, we're getting close-ish to it. We talked last time, and I don't think you know this, Adrian, but we talked last time about how Huzzah is canceled for this year. Yeah. What they're doing is they're going to have a virtual convention May 21st to the 23rd, being titled Hold the Line, a Virtual Huzzah. And we've been asked to participate. So I don't know. I'm not counting on asking you to do much, if anything, actually. But talks are happening. But main point is there's going to be some sort of virtual Huzzah, and then next year, 2022, right? Am I right? Yeah, 2022. is going to be a 4-day in person. Huzzah.
That I'm looking forward to.
Me too. I'm so excited about that. And
yeah,
that's so good. I'm lucky. I have 4 weeks of vacation, paid time off, whatever you want to call that. I have to use by the end of this fiscal year, end of June, but I get to carry 1 week over that I have to use by the end of October. But by carrying that over, I get to use that first, which then gives me 4 weeks of vacation to use for next fiscal. So like, it's going to come in handy for all the conventions. It's what I'm figuring. So that's going to be awesome. But I'm hoping that you will be going to 4-day huzzah next year.
I sincerely hope so. Yes.
But yeah, so exciting times for things. And, I think those are all the cool things that we have going on. Do you have any last messages you want to share with everyone before we wind down?
No.
That feels appropriate. Well, everyone, thank you so, so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. Thank you, of course, to everyone who supported us on the Kickstarter. I want to remind all of you that some of you have not sent in your backer surveys, so please send those in. We're going to be doing a, I hate to do it, but we're going to be doing a time limit on them. Because some of the stuff we really want to get going, because we're actually getting into the time where rewards would be delivered. And so it's helpful for us to, you know where to deliver the rewards. So if people can do that, that'd be awesome. But otherwise, just really appreciate each and every one of you. Appreciate you taking the time to listen to us and to be part of this community that we all have here. And remember, no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how many times you're watching Men in Kilts, because you say it's that you just want to go to Scotland, but really you like the Men in Kilts. It's okay. You know that you gotta, you need to, you have to. That's right. Keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Thank you to everyone who backed our 2021 podcast season on Kickstarter. In particular, we'd like to thank 3DDZYN at 3ddesign.com, Nate Taylor of Dwarven Forge, and Things from the Basement, where you can get highly detailed laser-cut terrain kits for 28, 20, and 15mm figures and other exciting products. We couldn't have been successful without the help of all of you. Thank you so much for your support and being part of our community. We hope you are enjoying the 2021 season.